is the relationship between the Atomic Energy Commission and the prion research that you're doing?
Initially, my institute was interested in these diseases because prions are extraordinarily resistant to radiations. These are the more difficult transmissible agents to decontaminate.
How are we decontaminating right now?
In fact, that's a concern because the official rules, which are autoclaving at high temperature or treatment by sodium hydroxide or by sodium hypochlorite, are not applicable in many occasions, notably for medical instruments, but also for all biological products.
So in the case of surgical instruments, if they become contaminated after surgery is done, for example, do you have to just throw everything out?
For the moment, that's the rule. Mm-hmm.
Can you give me some examples of contamination that has occurred where a person was operated on, it turned out that they had the disease, and then perhaps it was passed on to someone else?
So for the moment, fortunately, it's rare, and it never happened for the moment for variant CJD. You have rare stories. One of the most famous ones were linked to neurosurgery with electrodes which were used to treat very aggressive forms of epilepsy. And two patients were successively contaminated by these electrodes after a first operation of a case of sporadic Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which was not diagnosed because it was atypical, and thus not recognized at the moment of the operation. And so the beginning was epilepsy, and this old woman was treated as such. And then the neurosurgical instruments, and notably the electrodes, were contaminated. And several years after, these electrodes were still contaminated. And when they were implanted in the brain of a chimpanzee, the animal developed the disease.
Several years? How could it last that long?
These are the characteristics of these agents. They are extraordinarily resistant, and notably in the environment. And that's why you have a problem in North America with chronic wasting disease, because the contamination of the environment, we don't know how to treat it.
Is there anything else comparable in nature?
One of the most comparable things is the anthrax. When it's sporulated, you know that the ground can be contaminated for decades. So we are in the same order of magnitude and same difficulty to decontaminate, even if prions are even more difficult to decontaminate than sporulated anthrax.
Well, how new is this? Because it makes you wonder, how did we manage to survive this long?
In fact, if you look at the epidemiology, these diseases in humans are very rare. In cattle, were not existing or were not diagnosed, implicating a very low level until human intervention via meat and bone meals, which allowed this agent to be amplified, meaning that the first animal contaminated, we don't know for the moment the origin of this contamination, even if several scientists strongly suspect what are called now atypical cases of BSC, which are sporadic and apparently, I would say natural, to be at the origin. But then the fact to put them again into the feed and to give them to new animals allowed to create artificially a cycle of amplification of these agents. In other words, when an animal is infected by food, it allows this agent to replicate, and from few infectious units, you have billions of infectious units. And in the brain, mainly brain and spinal cord. And if, unfortunately, this brain is used again in the food and disseminated to a large number of animals, all these animals potentially are contaminated. So what occurred for BSC, BSC is bovine spongiform encephalopathy, meaning MATCO disease. What occurred in UK is that the first cases were very limited, but at the end, we are at almost 200,000 cases diagnosed, and it is estimated between 2 and 4 million animals which were in fact infected, non-diagnosed and which could pass into the human food chain.
Well, when we find these infected animals and they're killed, what happens to their bodies? How are they being disposed of, and is that really a safe means of dealing with it?
So now that I'm going to speak of Europe, of course, for BSE, now that the systematic tests have been implemented at slaughterhouses, all the animals over a certain age, which was initially 30 months, which now have been increased because the epidemic has decreased, and so no more young animals develop the disease. You have to remind that more the infection, the contamination is important, shorter is incubation period. So for limited contamination, you have very long incubation period. And the fact that you had this systematic testing at the slaughterhouse allowed to pick the animals which were contaminated, or at least at a phase of the disease where they were dangerous. And when they were identified, these animals were destroyed, meaning burned. And for the others, there was the ban on the offals, consisting mainly by the destruction of brain and spinal cord. It was extended by security to other offals, but the two main tissues which were dangerous and are still dangerous in cattle are brain and spinal cord.
But where is it actually ending up? If the prion protein is virtually indestructible, are they ending up in landfills or in the soil? What's actually happening?
So I told you that it was almost indestructible by, or difficult to very difficult to decontaminate by usual techniques. When you burn them at more than 800 degrees, then you get rid of it. So, but you cannot burn thousands of tons. So the idea is to identify what is dangerous and to destroy it selectively, and the rest can be used.
Is there anything new on the horizon in terms of dealing in a more effective fashion with the destruction or decontamination?
You have new techniques that are currently developed. You have one in Canada, from what I saw, where you come to an hydrolysis combining autoclaving, high temperature, high pressure, and hydrolysis by sodium hydroxide. So that's an interesting technique. There is also one that we are currently developing for our government to try to have something less aggressive and to allow the reuse of the food after this. Because we are in a paradoxical situation in Europe where we have almost no more cases and where we destroy a maximum of things. So from an ecological point of view, that's quite a large wasting. And if we were able to give a guarantee that we are able to block the infectious agent and not allow it to replicate after that, that would be a great improvement.
Now, you spoke on a panel today looking at some of these new variants of the various diseases, prion diseases, that are popping up. What's the concern with them?
You have different concerns depending on the species. You are speaking notably of the atypical BSE. Atypical BSE are strains of BSE which were not diagnosed before the systematic test. They are occurring in very old animals, more than 10 years, and generally with no clinical signs and are diagnosed only at the slaughterhouse. But it turns out that these strains and the infected animals, which are very rare, are sporadic and could be at the origin of BSE. In other words, for a very long time, nobody knew from which animals or what was the origin of BSE. Scrapie was strongly suspected initially, but with absolutely no experimental confirmation. Now, with what has been observed with those cases of atypical BSE, is that the serial transmission of these new strains allow a modification of the signature and fits with the BSE signature. So it looks as if the origin of BSE was one animal which had developed an atypical BSE, and that we allowed via meat and bone meal the recirculation, the reincorporation of this strain, which acquired more virulent properties and came to this terrific strain, highly resistant to everything, and which contaminated so many cattle.
What does this mean in the long term, either for human health or for economy?
You have several consequences. First of all, for the economy. For several years now, people and politics are hoping that with the disappearance of BSE, the problem is going to be solved. While if it turns out that the origin is sporadic cases, natural sporadic cases in cattle, you will never get rid of it, meaning that the source will be always there, and potentially, if you amplify it via the non-disposal of offals or other things, you could recreate potentially a new BSE epidemic. So that's the first concern. The second concern is for human. We have observed that atypical BSE was highly transmissible to primates, and giving a signature in one primate which was similar to certain cases, rare cases of sporadic CJD. CJD is Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. And thus, we suspect that some cases in human, which was of unknown origin, could be linked to these atypical cases in bovine, which are rare, but could be highly transmissible to human.
Before mad cow came on the scene, we didn't really think about prions at all. But now that all this research is being focused on trying to find the cause of that, we're beginning to see that there are connections with other human diseases like Alzheimer's. What does that say to you about the ultimate significance of prions and prion folding diseases?
Prions could be only the tip of the iceberg. That's a concern. For the moment, the main difference between the two diseases was that prions were transmissible, while Alzheimer was not. Things are moving on. First of all, because people have introduced the protein responsible, abnormal protein of Alzheimer in mice, in which in this model this protein exists only in human and not in mice. And in these transgenic animals, they begin to see diseases which are more or less transmissible, meaning that when now you extract fibrils from the brain of Alzheimer patients and that you inoculate those fibrils to these mice, they do develop a disease. So you begin to recreate what we know in prions. Another characteristic is the difficulty to decontaminate them, meaning that these fibrils are perfectly resistant to all what is inefficient on prions. Conversely, the techniques which allow to decontaminate prions render these fibrils inefficient to accelerate the natural disease in these transgenic mice. So the parallels are increasing. Moreover, you had last week a publication in Nature, very interesting, in which they have looked at what was a potential receptor to the toxic oligomers in Alzheimer. It turned out that in Alzheimer or in prions, you have an accumulation of abnormal proteins, which are not the same in both diseases, but that the main aggregates are not the interesting one. What could be interesting, what are the toxic products, are oligomers, meaning very small aggregates of these proteins. And when they used these aggregates obtained artificially or from the brains of patients developing Alzheimer, they found by screening more than 200,000 clones of cells expressing different proteins from the mouse brain, that only two clones were sticking with these oligomers of Alzheimer. And the two clones were corresponding to the same prion protein. So it turns out that the prion protein would be the intermediate necessary for the toxicity of these Alzheimer oligomers. Moreover, when you look at animals, transgenic mice, which do not express this prion protein, they are insensitive to the toxicity of these Alzheimer oligomers. And for the normal animals on slice of brains, which do express the prion protein and which are sensitive to the toxicity of these Alzheimer oligomers, when you treat them with antibodies against the prion protein, you protect them from the toxicity of the Alzheimer's aggregates. So it's more and more fascinating and exciting because the two fields are sharing common properties.
When you look at the whole range of research that's going on right now and the knowledge that we have accumulated, what is the big question that needs to be answered?
You have many big questions that still need to be answered. The first one is, what is the nature of these agents? We still don't know. Everybody considers that it's the prion hypothesis, which is a correct one, meaning that you have only one protein behind all this, which could turn out not to be correct. It could be much more complex than this. The second one is the total field of these misfolded proteins, meaning that you see the parallels that you do have between prion and Alzheimer. But we have a lot of questions about other diseases, including Huntington disease, Parkinson, diabetes. And in all these, perhaps with the improvement of the experimental models, we are going to find links. And more generally, our science have been able to treat bacteria, not to get rid of viruses, but to know many things about viruses. And so our population is getting more and more old. And now we are discovering all these degenerative diseases that perhaps have an origin and are not idiopathic, as was thought initially for bacteria or for viruses. And there is an origin that could be treated.
Another issue that's come up, which seems to be much more serious than mad cow, is the chronic wasting disease that we see moving now through our deer and elk population. What is your concern about that?
The concern about chronic wasting disease is that it's a disease which is progressing naturally. It was limited initially to two small clusters in Colorado and Wyoming, and it's extending every year more. As you know, now it's in Canada, and we don't know how to stop it. It turns out that apparently the environment is implicated. In other words, when we maintain animals in a contaminated area, after a few years, all the animals are contaminated and die. That the animals which are killed by the hunters in the initial clusters appear to be more and more highly contaminated, and that the techniques which were envisioned of depopulation seems not to be very efficient. So that is the bad side of the story, something which has emerged decades ago, but which now is disseminating more and more, and on which we have difficulties to have a correct control. On the other hand, for the moment, fortunately, it's only a disease which has an impact on the animals and nothing for humans. But with prion disease, we always need to be very cautious. And the fact that it expands a lot in animals implies that the contact with humans is going to increase. And that's thus we could see things appearing in the following years.
Well, considering that it was first clustered in two small spots in the States, that would indicate that it's relatively new. What would have caused it to start?
For the moment, we don't know. I've seen theories claiming that it was because experiments were done in these areas initially on scrapie, and that it expanded into wild animals. But that's only on a hypothesis. The problem is that one new strain developed in a new species, it acquires new properties which are not predictable. And now that the chronic wasting disease has extended from these to wild-tailed deer, which migrate much more, as are less gregarious, and that you see that more and more animals are exposed, you could have new transmissions to new species and new evolution of the strains. That's all the difficulties with these transmissible agents, is that they do replicate. And more you let them replicate, more you increase the probability of seeing emerging new variants with new properties. That's a common feature of viruses and bacteria, but that's the reality.
You've come from France to the conference here in Edmonton. What's the most exciting thing that you've heard discussed at this conference?
What was very interesting is the speed at which the knowledge has evolved on chronic wasting disease. A few years ago, almost nobody knew anything about this disease. And now, a number of Canadian and US groups are deeply involved in this, and they are bringing new data at each conference, which are very important for to anticipate what could occur. And frankly, they are making an extraordinary job, and I think that it will be very useful for the future.
Thank you very much, Jean-Philippe.
That was a pleasure.